Hello and welcome to this PSG Think Big series podcast. In this program, Alicia Seckham speaks to the South African Minister of Transport, Barbara Creecy, on roads, rails and ports and the future of the South African transport industry.
Hello, you're watching the Think Big series brought to you by PSG. I'm Alicia Seckham. Well, we're all too familiar with South Africa's aging transport infrastructure and the extent to which it's impeding economic growth. In fact, the SARB in its financial stability review goes as far as to say that the sustained deterioration in critical infrastructure poses direct operational risks that could disrupt the functioning of the financial system. That said, government has identified transport and logistics as one of the key work streams for collaborative action between government and business aimed at removing obstacles to inclusive economic growth and job creation by addressing critical challenges that persist. So with Barbara Creecy having been appointed Minister of Transport, a year into her tenure, we're taking stock of where things are at. And Minister, we know that you have your hands full. Rail and port logistics, by no means the only thing on your plate that you're dealing with. You've got the air traffic crisis at ATNS, overseeing a turnaround at AXA, some stiff opposition to the appointment of SAA CEO, governance issues at the Road Accident Fund, a stalling driving license card account, questions around COVID disbursements continuing to be paid to the taxi industry. I could go on. It really is a complex portfolio with 12 entities in your ambit, but we only have 30 minutes today. So we're going to have to refine our focus for the purpose of this conversation. And Minister, right at the top, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And before we get into any of it, I've got to ask you, a year in, how are you keeping up with the demands of this portfolio?
Greetings to you, Alicia, and thank you very much for inviting me on your show. I think I can say it's the best and the worst job I've ever had. It's the best because there's so much to learn and so much to contribute. And the worst is because there are lots of things that are wrong and putting it right is very complicated. By the way, it's 16 entities, not 12. Although I am blessed with a hardworking deputy minister and we do share those entities amongst ourselves.
Okay, so there is some distribution of the workload, but 16 entities nevertheless. Benefit of hindsight, how have your impressions of the issues that needed to be tackled at the start, Minister, stacked up against the reality of what you're up against?
Well, I think that you point out in the beginning that logistics is an abiding constraint on our economy. And we've heard figures that the logistics problems are costing our economy as much as R1 billion a day. Now, I think that one of the things that we did early on was to try and define some specific targets that would guide this five-year term so that in amongst all the crises, one is actually making consistent progress that would enable us to have the logistics sector in better shape at the end of this term than it was at the beginning. And I think in this regard, it's helpful to share with you what I call the six numbers. Mm-hmm. So the first is that the intention in this term is to increase the amount of freight that is moving on the Transnet rail system from 149 million tons, which is what we found in at the beginning of the term, to 250 million tons annually. At the end of this last financial year, the Transnet War Room has brought us up to 161 million tons, so there is progress there. In terms of ports, we want to make sure that we boost port productivity to the international benchmark of 30 gross crane moves per hour. This is the speed at which one loads and unloads ships. The progress here has been slow, but this year we have taken delivery of a whole lot of new cranes, RTGs, straddles, and so on. And we are in the process of commissioning those. So we do expect that there's going to be improvements on this target going forward. In terms of passenger rail, we are looking at restoring the Prasa network so that we should have 600 million passenger journeys a year by 2030. At the moment, we are at 77 million passenger journeys a year. We have managed with the restoration of the Central Line in Cape Town to have 35 out of our 40 priority lines are now working. With regard to the aviation sector, very important sector for our economy, we want a footprint of 42 million passengers through the AXA network per annum, and we want to triple current air freight to 1.2 million tons per annum. And then, of course, a very important statistic is to reduce road accidents and road fatalities by 50%. And clearly part of what that involves is massive public sector outreach, partnerships with civil society, but also, of course, upgrades to our provincial and our national roads. We are making progress. It's hard work. It's very slow. But so far this year, we've got the accident rate down by 9%. So I am hopeful that this target is achievable by 2030.
And I mean, you made it clear on your appointment, right, that your key priority is the stabilization and improved governance of the department and its entities to restore overall investor confidence. A year on, as you've now given us some hint to the progress that is being made, how would you be marking the pace of progress, 1 to 10?
Look, I think that, you know, I tend to go along the lines of saying that you must do 20% per annum if you are going to achieve what you want to achieve in 5 years. So I think that we are not at the 20%, but we are close to it. I think that what we also need to understand is that there are some key issues that we have to solve in order to get an escalation in the output. So, for example, in the case of Transnet, there has to be fundamental investment in the rail network. Otherwise, you are not going to be able to improve the tonnage because the lines are in a bad way. There's a lack of cabling and signaling. Similarly, in Prasa, now that we've restored most of the major lines, the key issue that we have to fix now is the question of signaling. Because once we have signaling, we can put these beautiful brand new trains. I think if I move a little bit to one side or another, there we go. On the one side of me, you can see one of those beautiful blue Prasa trains, 100% South African manufactured train. We will take a delivery of 600 of these trains. We've already got 287. In order to use them all, we need signaling. And once, you know, per line, as we replace the signaling, then, of course, your passenger numbers automatically shoot up. Similarly, with regard to air freight, we've got to build this new freight terminal at O.R. Tambo. Once we do that, I think that there is demand. In the private sector, we will see that number going up.
Okay, so like I said, Minister, 30 minutes, not nearly enough time, right, to get into everything you're dealing with. So let's home in at this point. Just last month, Moody's placed most of Transnet's ratings on review for downgrade, reflecting its growing concern over Transnet's unsustainable capital structure, deteriorating liquidity position, lack of agreement on further government support, and then slower than planned operational improvements. Is the concern warranted, given some of the progress you're making?
Look, I think that one has got to be concerned about the debt structure in Transnet as long as we are not making new investments in the rail infrastructure that would allow us to increase the tonnage. Because once we increase the tonnage, then obviously we're going to be increasing the revenue. In this regard, Transnet has put in a request to the budget facility for infrastructure, both the July and the October windows. It's a significant amount of money that we are asking for, and that is what I call the short-term infrastructure injection. Of course, there is a whole broader process of rail reform that is taking place in our country. You would know that in January, December and January this year, we issued a network statement that called for third-party participation in our freight sector. It's the first time this has ever happened in our country. We are in the process of finalizing the establishment of the economic regulator, which is going to be the transport equivalent of NERSA. We have an interim tariff. If you want to move a ton of coal or a ton of iron ore, we have those tariffs, and Transnet will soon be appointing third-party operators on the five priority freight lines. Of course, equally important has been the request for information that closed at the end of May. And this is really for those who are interested in investing in infrastructure in the key priority freight corridors, the associated ports, and in the ports in general, so that we can reestablish South Africa as a sub-regional maritime hub. Obviously, third-party participation is based on the assumption that the infrastructure will remain state-owned. And in this regard, we have set up what we call TRIM, which is the infrastructure manager of Transnet. And I think the vision is that Transnet in the longer term should be an infrastructure provider. Obviously, Transnet Freight will still exist, but there will be other freight operators. And Transnet would be making its revenue from different freight operators that would be operating on their network. But what we understand is that bringing in third parties to invest in the infrastructure is going to take time. We've done a lot of research on this base case scenario. If we issue the calls for proposals at the end of the year, it will take us 2 years to reach financial close. And that's why this interim request to the budget facility for infrastructure is so important. So we understand what's the long-term vision and the long-term plan. We imagine that we could have some form of partnership to fix the infrastructure. It could be a concession, it could be a BOT, it could be a triple P. That is part of the information we've been collecting from the RFI process. But that is, I think, the longer term vision of rail reform that is intended to reestablish rail as the backbone of transport for both people and goods in our country.
I want to zoom in, Minister, on that request for information that you launched in March, right? To invite private sector involvement in rail and port systems, because while it isn't a formal procurement process, it's a mechanism to understand the level of commitment from the private sector to get involved. So what sense have you gotten of the role the private sector is willing to play in reversing the decline of the logistics sector?
Well, I think where we have to start is just to tell you about the appetite. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we were overwhelmed by the appetite. There were 11,000 visits to that site and 163 submissions in terms of information. And obviously, if you know, just do the basic needs and divide that by five, it really tells you that there was significant interest in all of the freight corridors. There was significant interest in the ports. Of course, these are very technical documents. Mm-hmm. And the PSP unit is busy combing through those documents together with our department and Transnet so that we can use those documents to shape the request for proposals. But I'm really pleased by the response. I'm really pleased with the interest. And I think that it's going to mean that future proposals will be responsive. And that was the key thing we wanted to ensure, is that proposals were responsive, because in the past we have seen situations where proposals that have been put out by state-owned entities have not been appetizing and interesting to the market.
As you said, Minister, this is all in a bid to develop an enabling investment environment for those who are interested in investing, right? Is there anything that stands out so far when it comes to under what conditions private sector would be interested?
It's too early for me to say that, but it's very important to say that part of the reason we've set up the PSP unit is to make sure that there are rules that are going to guide this process. Mm-hmm. We're a latecomer to rail reform, but so the disadvantage is that many other countries have a 20-year start on us. The advantage is that you can learn a lot from what went right and what went wrong in those other countries. And, what we've learned is that you do need to have overall control of the network. Otherwise, you can land up with a balkanized system. We've also learned that if, for example, you were to put out a rail concession, you've got to be very clear what are the maintenance obligations of the concessionaire and in what condition is the rail going to be returned to the state at the end of the concession. What is also important is interoperability. You don't want a situation where concessionaire A says, no, these trains and that belonging to that operator can't operate on my line. So rules, I think, are very important. And obviously, there is a broader economic environment in which we are operating. We are involved in trying to make sure that the demographic majority in our country are part of economic programs. So broad-based Black economic empowerment in this process is going to be an important issue. The question of making sure that we reach financial close and that we're not overburdening the state, but at the same time, it's financially viable for the operator. These are all issues that are going to be in consideration on the structuring of future requests for proposals.
And I guess that outlining why we don't just jump straight to the request for proposals, right? And why we don't just put it to market straight away, even if it's going to take, 18 to 24 more months to actually conclude any of these deals. How much of the caution you're coming in at this with, Minister, as a result of some of the lessons you've learned from within your department? So from the licensing tender procurement process, for example.
Well, I think one's got to distinguish between the way in which you structure a proposal and the way in which you adjudicate a proposal. So obviously, there's also got to be proper, training and development around adjudication. Because if you set up A, B, and C as the criteria for adjudication, you can't then use D, E, and F as the basis of your decision making, because that is going to land you in court. And I suppose that even within the Transnet environment, we have this example of Pier 2, which is in court. So I do think that both the development of the proposal and the adjudication process are very important areas if we want to make sure that we have a good outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got to be systematic about this if we're going to, get this right. Again, though, time is not on our side. You highlighted the fact that we're playing a 20-year catch-up, comparatively speaking to some of the other countries out there. So give us a sense of the scale of investment that's needed. I know you talk about interim measures and, that being done through a government side of things and with Treasury. From private sector, what are you looking at?
Well, I mean, there are all kinds of estimations that I've seen. I've seen a figure of 200 billion needed for development. I suppose the short term is that right now, I think we would need to be investing in the region of about 15 to 20 billion a year into the network, if we want to see that network functioning effectively and if we want to be able to increase the number of train slots. But what is also interesting in our reform journey is the National Rail Master Plan that we will be putting out later this year for public consultation. And I'm raising this because you would understand that our existing network has not been developed since the 1970s, with the exception of the Gautrain. So we are operating on a very old network. We are also operating on what we call Cape Gauge, which is a narrow track compared with the rest of the world is moving towards standard gauge because it allows for speed and for... I'm sure rail experts will cringe when I say this, but double-decker trains, which, if you're looking at the general freight corridor between Johannesburg and Durban, if you could put two containers, one on top of the other, then obviously you are maximizing your output in a single train. Mm-hmm. So, I think that we need to think in two senses. How do we fix what we have so that it functions much, much better and gets us to the 250 million tons? But already there's appetite for 300 million tons. So the question we need to be asking is, if rail is going to go back to being the backbone for the transportation of people and for goods, what is our long-term vision of the kind of modernized rail system that we would want to see in our country? And obviously, it's about development of the rail infrastructure. It's about development of the control network. We are operating on a very basic control system, but obviously, with the digital age, rail systems are in developed countries highly digitized, very advanced in terms of their operations and control. So I think that my own view is that we have to think short term and long term. And part of what we want to look at in the proposals is can we see long term vision here versus a short to medium term vision? And how would we want to process that vision in the proposals that go out going forward?
Yeah, the rail experts may have cringed, but I mean, we get the visual, and that that simplifies things a lot for your man on the street, right? The question around long term versus short term: how do you, Minister, balance long term logistics reform, which you've clearly outlined now, with the need for urgent, visible service delivery improvements, especially for players like SMMEs and agri-exporters that are impacted by delays? So how do you deal with the now while, pursuing this vision for the future?
Well, first of all, I think that the network statement that was calling for additional operators provides a very interesting situation, because you would understand that from a Transnet point of view, Transnet would have certain lines that they would regard as being very viable, other lines they would regard as not being so viable. But Transnet running a big freight service would be really offering a one-size-fits-all service. Some of the operators that I have met and spoken to want to offer a more niche service that relates to sidings. And there's also interest, although we're not dealing with it in this particular round of RFPs, there's also interest in branch lines that would service particular agricultural areas or particular tourism routes. So that is still there as a medium to long term development objective. But I think that bringing in third party operators does allow for the development of more niche services that an operation such as Transnet Freight really can't consider. But also, I do want to go back to the approach we've made to the budget facility for infrastructure, because we do have to fix the existing lines now so that we can just run more trains and run them faster. You know, we had a very successful shut on the manganese line last year. It was something where we worked together with the private sector. It was the first time we had such good cooperation between the private sector and Transnet. We hope that the shut on the coal line this year will also yield a similar partnership, although it's more complicated because there's more operators. But we are also working with National Treasury, because some of our customers are saying to us, look, we're willing to put money in and fix this and fix that. So what we're working with National Treasury is a legal instrument that would allow for that kind of development. So these would all be the short-term ways that we want to get the tonnage up. Transnet are now setting themselves, I think it's 180 million tons for this financial year. I'm not sure whether we're going to get there, but I think it's very good to have ambitious targets, because if there isn't ambition, we're not going to move the system.
Yeah. Along with that, and I want to get into now, Minister, you know, structural reforms that are needed beyond turnaround plans to actually ensure real accountability and operational efficiency if we're going to sustain, you know, the success of anything that's being put in place now. You're the sixth Transport Minister in 7 years, and at the time of your appointment, there was, I remember, some concern about continuity. You know, what assurance can you give that implementation, first of all, won't get stuck in bureaucracy? And secondly, do you have enough capacity to monitor all of these entities closely so that they're accountable, so that budget is spent well and can be accounted for?
Look, I think what is important to say is that all the work I'm doing is based on the National Rail Policy and the Freight Logistics Roadmap that were adopted by my predecessors. And, you know, I've been fortunate. I haven't had to develop the strategy. I'm just continuing with the implementation. And obviously, we're working very closely with the National Logistics Crisis Committee and the presidency around the reform program that is clearly laid out. Mm. I think that in order to give certainty on the future of the reform program, it's very important to enshrine that reform program in law. So we will be bringing later this year the rail bill. Interestingly, there isn't actually a bill that deals with all aspects of rail in our country. So this will be the first framing legislation. But I think that legislation is always important, because then it gives legal certainty to the direction within which one would be moving. Obviously, more definite legal certainty than just a policy that has been adopted by cabinet and could be changed by a future cabinet.
Yeah. And As we wrap things up, I mean, as you progress with all of this, how are you aligning these transport reforms, Minister, with South Africa's industrial strategy and regional trade ambitions?
That's a really interesting question, because one of the issues that we did raise in the RFI is link towards domestic production of rail components. So what one understands is if you're going to have a major revamp of the lines, it's obviously potentially very beneficial for the South African steel industry. So we are exploring in that RFI the localization issues. For our steel industry to really be put on a good footing, we do need a demand of about 200,000 tons a year. And between Minister Ramakgopa and his building of transmission towers and our upgrade of rail, we think that we can create that demand. So I think that's a very important issue. We are already turning 145 tons of steel, South African-made steel, into one of these PRASA trains. So we have the know-how and the capability in our country. I think it's a question of, as you correctly say, linking different initiatives. It's a matter that myself, Minister Ramakgopa and Minister Tau have already discussed. And so it is shaping our perspective in the future requests for proposals. Let me also say to you that once we sort out our own logistics situation, South African expertise is much in demand in the subcontinent. This revitalization of rail is something that other countries in the subcontinent are already involved in. There has been agreement between Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Namibia to build a railway line linking Maputo with Walvis Bay. As we know, there is the Lobito Corridor, which is being developed between the DRC and Angola. South African companies are already involved in building that railway line. So we do think that while we regard these kinds of logistics developments as being competition for Transnet, it's also potentially future business for Transnet as a rail operator or as a freight operator. So I think that it's very important that we have that long-term perspective in terms of where we would want to go to with the future of the entity, and also, as you correctly say, the way in which it could support broader economic development in our country.
Absolutely. Well, Minister, your role, of course, crucial in shaping South Africa's logistics path and, as such, the direction of South Africa's economy, where an efficient and a functioning transport sector is the key to a successful and a growing economy. So all the best as you steer this agenda. And thanks so much for having joined us on the Think Big series today. To our audience, that's where we leave it for this episode of the Think Big series. Remember, the series is free, it's shareable, it's accessible to anyone, whether you're a PSG client or not. So keep the conversation going using the hashtag ThinkBigPSG. From me, Alicia Seckham, thanks for watching and goodbye until next time.